Welcome to the Men of 8 Gang podcast, episode 291. I'm Steve Borsch, and of course, I'm on with three wonderful guys, including Tim Elliott.
Hey, good morning.
Graham Thickens.
Hey, glad to be back after a hiatus of a couple of weeks.
And Phil Wilson.
Hello.
How are you guys doing this morning?
Good. I'm pissed.
Awesome.
Why are you pissed?
Oh, you are.
That the league denied Adrian Peterson's appeal. I think this is shameful and ridiculous.
Yeah. Okay.
Roger Goodell should be run out of the NFL commissioner's office.
Yeah.
Are you being sarcastic?
No, I'm serious. Peterson's, I think what he did was bad. He was punished for it, but he shouldn't be out for the season while Ray Rice, who, you know,
knocked out his girl,
was beating up his wife on video, is fine to come back whenever he can find a team. Now, he may not find a team, but I just find that to be, I don't know. Yeah. It just pisses me off.
And what's this about Adrian might go train for the Olympics now? Like,
I haven't heard that.
They allow child abusers in over there?
Maybe so. There's nothing in the Olympic rules against it, so.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah.
He's going to do hurdles or something.
It's like Olympic switch wielding.
Yeah, maybe there's a new sport. No, we shouldn't. We shouldn't joke about these things.
Not at all, actually. No. Yeah.
These are serious things.
Yep. Yep. Well, I want to just do a quick recap of something that I went to this week because I'm Internet of Things boy.
And, yes, you are.
I was really excited about this free conference done by a company called Arrow Electronics. Now, do you guys know Arrow? I mean, are you?
I've heard of them. Yeah.
Also, they're an enormous distributor. But they primarily focus on industrial and commercial. So it's, you know, electronic components that are made in finished goods and you know, everything having to do with industrial applications and so on. And so this was actually more of a industrial internet kind of event. So, you know, big time sensors. I mean, if you're a company that needs to have sensors that go into big oil tanks or on trains, you know, that kind of stuff, or in agricultural fields, farm fields, this is the event you'd be at. And so that was primarily the audience. But what was really interesting was to go through these different sessions. And I got to tell you that as much as I know about the space, my jaw still dropped on the stuff that is available, chipsets and platforms and, you know, integrations and solutions that have been built that cover everything from the platform to the end users, you know, refrigeration sensors. I mean, just truly was blown away by.
Were all the big vendors there, like Qualcomm and GE and some of the
everybody was there.
Really,
IBM and Intel, Oracle, local Digi. I had to take a conference call, so I was unable to see the session that Joel Young was in. So I don't even know if he was there. I didn't see him. I didn't run into him. But
who's that now?
Joel Young. He's the CTO at Digi.
Oh, okay. I don't know him. I know the CMO over there.
Yeah, yeah. And
Jeff Liebel, who I'm sure was there too.
I'm sure everybody was there.
So it drew a lot of people, huh?
Well, you know, there were a lot of empty seats in the main venue, so I'm going to guess that there were maybe 250.
But so it was a conference and an exhibit.
The exhibit didn't happen until later.
I see.
In the day. And there was a cocktail hour and so forth, and so you could schmooze for several hours. I didn't stay for the whole thing. I couldn't. But
is this a national show road show that they're doing in separate cities?
Yep, yeah. Yep. Okay. And interestingly, again, is it's Boston, which makes complete sense, San Jose, and Minneapolis.
Huh.
Those
great.
Three. So it was. Really fabulous. The one thing that stood out to me a little bit was that there wasn't a really high focus on healthcare based applications. A lot of talk about big data, but you know, and how to monetize the Internet of Things and so on. That was more startup related, smaller companies. Even though there were some big companies on the dock, but it was really worth going to.
Yeah. So, good.
Yeah.
Well, you know, an Arrow does have a presence here in Eden Prairie, or they used to have a pretty good sized office. So that might be one reason why they chose Minneapolis.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they're a $21 billion company. They've got offices all over the world, like, you know, 400 to 500 offices. I forget what the number is, but, so they're a big, big organization. So of course, all of the only thing that I took issue with is in a lot of the solution sessions, they were led by vendors and there was at least, you know, 30 to 50% of the session was, here's who we are. Here's what we do. Here's what we make, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, well that's fine. But you know, cut to the chase and get into the use cases and what you're seeing in terms of opportunities and growth and et cetera, et cetera. So but still it was interesting to see Arrow take a leadership position in this space because nobody really has.
Sure.
So
they probably should have had an analyst or two speaking from one of the big research houses.
As main speakers, but on the panels and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. Cool.
Good stuff.
I saw that event and I figured you'd be there.
Yeah. I was all over it. It was
great. And what day was that? Tuesday or Wednesday or,
it was Thursday.
Oh, it was. Well, hey, that was the same day that Salesforce did their world tour at the convention center. Was the IoT thing at the convention center?
No, it was at the Hyatt.
Oh, okay. Well, over at the convention center, Salesforce had their traveling road show, which I was going to try to drop into, but I was too busy.
Well, Jennifer Zick, I don't know if you know Jennifer.
Yep. Yeah, oh,
she,
yeah.
She joined Magnet 360. She joined Salesforce Direct, right?
No. Yeah. She went to PwC as head of marketing for their Salesforce practice.
Sorry, Jennifer.
Yeah, yeah.
But... yeah, you know, I first met her. In fact, you and I, Graham, were at an event that Vizzy put on.
Oh, yeah.
And she was with Reside, the big integrator for Salesforce. Yep.
Uh-huh.
And you and I stood and talked to her at a booth.
Yeah, yeah. I remember that.
And
then Reside got acquired by Magnet 360. And
No. They merged.
Well, they merged. Whatever. Yeah. And the Reside name, I don't even know if they use that anymore. They might, but anyway, yeah, Jennifer moved on. Big promotion. She's traveling all over the place for PwC now.
Yep.
What's
going on with our pals Digital River? You know, I've not talked to my neighbor, John Ebert, for quite a while now. It's probably been a month. And
they got problems. Huh?
You haven't talked to him ever since your dog kind of took a dump in his yard, or what was that?
Actually, they have a dog, so my dog does in fact dump in their yard every day. But we carry these little plastic bags.
And of course. I believe they have the Eden Prairie logo on them too, don't they?
No, they don't.
Oh, anyway, it's kind of always kind of dicey it's always difficult when you have a large client, because those large clients tend to want to get larger with you, and because if you do good business with them, but then all of a sudden you find yourself going, ooh, they're making up just a wee bit too much of our portfolio. We're going to be in trouble.
Yeah. I remember the first time this happened, and it hasn't happened yet. They haven't lost the Microsoft account, but Microsoft delayed their contract signing until they aren't going to make their decision till the 19th of December.
Which is long enough to just make the deal that Digital River is trying to put together to sell just a little bit dicey. Because, I mean, just the talk of it is enough to make everybody nervous.
Oh, God, yes.
Stock tanked, yeah.
Well, these private equity partners, who Cirrus Capital is, you know, Digital River's in play, and Cirrus Capital is the one that's looks like it's going to do the deal, or was maybe. These private equity guys don't fool around, boy. If there's a sudden drop in value, they can either look at this as a buying opportunity or let's just run for the hills.
Oh, the deal will be dead, you know. And at one time, I mean, if they lose that Microsoft business, did anybody read what percentage of their business is now? When this happened before, I remember hearing it was like a third of their revenues.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
So it's dangerous stuff.
I think it's just Microsoft is putting the screws on them.
Yeah. So contract negotiation. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. So they'll get a better deal, and you know, Digital River will be fine. Now, I don't know if this will affect their deal with Cirrus, but we will see in coming days.
Yep. Yeah. Right before Christmas, these year-end M&A kind of deals are crazy. I mean, December is always a busy month.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, then you got profit taking going on, and then now with the oil, this is so funny, you know. So my mom had 1/16th share in a single oil well in the Bakken Shield. So I remember she was boasting about how she got like $50 a month. She was all happy about that. And then when my dad lived much, much longer than he thought he would, he was pulling out, $1,500 to $2,000 a month. Ah. And after he passed, then that got split four ways. But the royalties have dropped like a rock. I mean, there's just nickels and dimes every month. And that's good for retailers because people are paying less at the pump and all that. But, I forgot where I was going with that.
Well, it greatly affected the stock market, you know.
Oh, that's where I was going with it. Thank you. Crashing
because oil dropped the market tanked. $60 a barrel now. I mean, and all the oil companies are cutting back on their capital expenditures now because as you can well imagine, you know, and there'll probably be layoffs and everything else, but who knows how long it's going to last, the low prices, but it does give consumers more jingle in their pocket, that's for sure. So retailers have to love this because this is going to spike last minute shopping.
Absolutely.
And so over at Best Buy and Target, they've got to be, you know, just licking their chops.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, well, in fact, I had a buddy who's, I've been hammering on him for years because he drives like the worst gas mileage cars in the universe. And so they were going to buy a Toyota hybrid, SUV. And, he goes, yeah, you know, the gas prices are so low now, blah, blah, blah. So what did he get? A Yukon, GMC Yukon.
God.
Like the longest possible vehicle you can get. And and he's driving it like 95% of the time just by himself.
But the sales on the big trucks and SUVs are going up because consumers have such short memories, you know.
Yeah,
there's a reason for that. It's like, yeah, duh.
Yeah.
You know, I sometimes want, never mind. I get off on a rant on people that drive SUVs that don't have, if you're the Duggars and you've got a big family, okay, you got to have a big ride. But if you're a single person or somebody who has grown kids, why do you need a car that big?
Yeah.
I mean, all you're doing is sucking up more gas and ultimately costing yourself more money.
It's a free country, Phil. People can do whatever they want.
Yeah.
If you want to drive a, what were those
big car?
Big SUVs that the military uses. Oh, a Humvee. If you want to go out and get a Humvee and get 12 miles to the gallon, more power to you.
Well, yeah, but don't bitch about gas prices then.
Oh, no, I agree. I think it's stupid. But,
or when your condo in Florida gets flooded because the sea levels are up by a...
And for the love of God, don't fall back on that. It's American made.
It is American made, but
of course it's American made, but you know, you're pretty much screwing everybody else by driving this beastie around. So sorry, you get me started.
We are way off the track.
Well, let's instead
I got started.
Let's
got
instead started. Segue to a happy story of happy. An icy playground while you're walking through Target.
Icy playground.
Totally.
So, you know, when I first saw this thing, the story is about Target is a staging ground for Google's 3D Project Tango. And it's an article by Julio Ojeda Zapata in TwinCities.com. And I poo-pooed this almost immediately. I saw one short video on the news And I thought, who the hell's going to walk around with this thing? But reading this article and going through the video, the first one on in the article, and we'll put a link in the show notes. I looked at that and I went, you know, this is actually kind of cool. And hats off to Target for trying, for just, you know, exploring gaming in the store and creating motivation, and doing things that are atypical when you're in the stores. I mean, they're at least trying.
Well, they're trying to make the shopping experience an event or something that's different by tying in these games. So they're making shopping sort of a game, at least for kids, with that Bullseye's Playground, which is different than this Project Tango thing where right, you know, right. You have to have a special $1,000 Google tablet to make this work. So it's obviously that part of it is just sort of some future R&D kind of deal. But it shows you that the future of brick and mortar shopping can be digitized and made into an interesting experience.
Right. Yeah. Well said.
Well, that's where I was going to go with this is that I've been waiting for augmented reality. That's really great, where you can travel and hold up your phone and have overlays of historical events that happen in the spot that you're standing in, you know, things like that.
Can anybody else hear it coming? Can anybody else feel it coming?
What? Feel what coming?
You can't feel it. You can't hear it. You can't hear it, sense it in his voice.
What?
Steve's going to ask for a holodeck again.
Oh. Ah.
No, I missed it again. I'm too predictable.
we've done some of this augmented reality programming for some iOS apps that we've done for some clients, and it is... You know, it's always amazing to me when I see it. You know, maybe that's just because I'm, you know, still amazed at some of the stuff that you put a bunch of numbers and letters and characters together and you get some magic shit to happen. You know, I'm still amazed by some of these things. And that augmented reality piece is also another, really, or augmented, digital platform is just wonderful. So. I think this is a great deal, though. I was disappointed that Julio didn't call the mascot adorable again.
Oh, I know.
Because he heard last week's show
and saw the associated.
That's right, and so he was like, "Oh, okay, I'm not going there again."
Exactly. I'm just going to shut up now, and not give these guys any reason to abuse me.
Yeah, be careful, with Steve Borsch and his Photoshop.
but what do you know, Tim, about Project Tango itself, or you, Phil? I mean, have you guys explored it at all, or?
No, not specifically, not myself. Okay. Tim probably does, Mr. Retail himself. So.
It's an interesting project. It's an R&D thing at Google, and it's good to see Target experimenting with them. But this is way in the future. This is not something that will be built into next year's smartphones. You know.
Well, no, but I mean, they've got
eventually it will.
Though. Well, they've got this tablet development kit, and when you look at what's in it, it's got a lot of memory, 4 gigs of RAM, and a lot of storage, 128 gigs. But it also has motion tracking camera, integrated depth sensing, which I think is kind of cool. So it's probably almost like a sonar kind of thing. So it knows how close you are to something and how far away you are. Wi-Fi, Bluetooth low energy, and 4G LTE. That's quite a powerful tablet.
Well, it should be for $1,000.
Yeah. But, it'll be interesting. We're going to have to keep our eyes on this project.
So. Yeah, $1,000, that's more than my iPhone 6 Plus cost.
Wow.
Not by much.
Say, one of the things that
memory.
One of the things that Julio linked to is the University of Minnesota Mars Lab, the Multiple Autonomous Robotic Systems Lab. Do any of you guys know anything about that?
No.
Okay. What? Well, I'm gonna investigate that more. Well, they're doing all sorts of things with robotics and computer vision. So it'd be nice, they show autonomous stair climbing with a little machine that looks like a little tank with antennas on it. And I'm going to poke around a little bit more because it's, excuse me, they did a Project Tango on board a quad rotor. So, you know, you got a flying tablet basically that can do all kinds of stuff. So, but I'll put a link to this Project Mars in the show notes, 'cause it's kind of cool. And I didn't know about it.
Mm-hmm.
Creative engineering students over there, I'll tell you.
Yeah, no kidding.
So what's going on with this CenturyLink fiber? I'm dying to know because I keep getting the mailings, you know?
Do you really?
Yeah, I'm getting the mailings. And it's like, it's nowhere even close to Bloomington, is it?
Well, if you look at it, there's a you know, a couple square blocks up in Northeast. That's about it. Yeah.
Look at that map that guy has got way too much time in his
head. No kidding. Wow.
To get together this map, but it's cool as hell. But when you uncheck all of them except for the gig, it's like five places.
Right.
In one neighborhood.
In St. Paul.
Yeah. No, it's in Northeast Minneapolis.
Northeast. Yeah. Northeast, it's not even St. Paul. No.
Oh.
Yeah. So it's
in the new clues thing, though, I thought he was talking about St. Paul. I have to actually have to look at. No. No, I stand corrected. Never mind.
Yeah.
Call him Dr. Scholes. He stands corrected.
And it goes from a gig to 40 megabits. That's quite a big jump. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they get to pretty much the whole metro with 40.
We'll put a link to the show notes. You can go ahead and take a look at it yourself.
Yeah, this interactive map is really cool.
It's very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yep. So stop playing with it right now.
And move on.
We've got a ways to go before we're going to see any gig fiber from CenturyLink anyway here.
Oh, yeah. Tell me about it.
A couple of things in the health business, health sector, made public this week with HCMC, and then there's also a TechStars thing with Mayo Clinic. So, you know, the HCMC incubator space.
Yeah, talk about that, Graham, because you're the guy that found that.
Well, not only did I find it, but Treehouse Health Disclosure as a client, so I planted it.
Got it.
But I've actually known about this partnership they signed with HCMC some weeks ago now. But we were finally able to announce it. And Joe Carlson at the Tribune, the medical technology writer, did a real nice piece on it in this morning's paper. And a national trade publication site called MedCity News also wrote it up. It's a three-year partnership with a big healthcare provider, HCMC, with a small upstart incubator, accelerator, called Treehouse Health, headquartered in the Loring Park area of downtown Minneapolis. And the idea is this is the first corporate partner that's going to put some of its people in there on a regular basis, you know, to kind of rub shoulders with the innovative startup folks that can help them innovate internally faster, you know, get outside their four walls, their busy hospital. And, you know, it's not a totally new concept. I was reminded that there are at least two other healthcare startup accelerators that have partnered with hospitals in San Francisco. Rock Health did that. That's been around longer than Treehouse, Rock Health. And then in New York, there's Blueprint Health, another accelerator that's partnered with a big hospital out there. But, you know, Minneapolis is the third, and we certainly have a big, big healthcare community here. And this won't be the last of the large partners that the Treehouse will announce. They expect to have upwards of four. You know, might take a while yet to sign the other ones, but they're going to come.
Well, what I thought was interesting in this article was, you know, this three-person innovation center, HCMC Innovation Center, that are going to move to Treehouse. One of the biggest priorities is to find creative ways to redesign healthcare processes. So mm-hmm. that nurses with four-year degrees aren't out fetching coffee, taking mm-hmm. blood pressure readings, and passing out basic medications.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you know much about the future of healthcare, you know, it's one of the few systems left that's predominantly human-based. I mean, mm-hmm. you need human resources. You can't really apply technology to patient care. It'll be a while before we have androids, but also the healthcare resources and services administration of the Department of Health, U.S. Department of Health, says that by 2020 there'll be a projected shortage of 20,400 primary care physicians, and I've seen numbers much higher than that for nursing, mm-hmm. in the hundreds of thousands.
Wow.
By 2020, by 2030. But excuse me. It's they've got to make healthcare more efficient.
Yep.
Because this is a smart move on their part.
Yeah, and this is what Treehouse is really all about. I mean, the seven startups that they have housed in the 13,000 square foot facility are all kinds of different healthcare startups, but they do have a focus on process and on not just health IT, but what they call care coordination. You know, that's really what they're investing in, and the Blanks, who are the two behind Treehouse, John Blank and JD Blank, they are investing in these startups as well, and those are the focus areas for them. John Blank, the senior, who's an MD, being a former executive of United Health, actually headed up their venture capital unit before he retired from there. So they're they know what they're doing, and they're, you know, it's only been a year, and they've made pretty darn good progress, I'd say, in their first year.
Well, I was impressed. Who put the article in here about TechStars and Mayo Clinic teaming up?
Yeah, I did. We've been kind of expecting something's going to happen. I talked to Matt Otterstatter the other night at Treehouse. There was an event at Treehouse, and he's the one that alerted me to that news, and he's a VC with the new Villicus Ventures in town. He relocated here from California. His father's from here. And he knows the folks at TechStars pretty well because he's a Kauffman Foundation fellow. And that's Kansas City. And TechStars has a big presence and cooperative thing going with Kauffman Foundation. So he knew about TechStars, and he and I were chatting about this a while back, and he says, yeah, we got, you know, it's wild that TechStars hasn't paired up with anything in Minnesota yet, and they really should be paired up with Mayo. Well, sure enough, they are.
Well, and can you just give a real quick overview? Because TechStars, a lot of people don't know about TechStars, and it's a pretty amazing. Aren't they like the number one accelerator?
Many would argue that, but they would defer to Y Combinator as being the original brand, if you will, in the accelerator space, the 3-month accelerator programs. But Y Combinator is only Mountain View now, only in the Bay Area. TechStars launched after them. Y Combinator has been going on for close to 10 years, maybe more. TechStars launched in 07 in Boulder. And they proceeded over the next couple of years to open in other major tech centers around the country. They had four, within a couple of years. Despite our attempts to get them here, we didn't get Minneapolis on the map for them. But there really wasn't an ecosystem of angels slash mentors that would have put enough money in the pool to start one here, you know. Mm-hmm. But now what they're doing is they're going to Mayo, because many of their startups that they're accelerating, that they're choosing to be a part of their program, and they give them, you know, a small amount of funding. That's how these accelerators work. You know, usually it's in the neighborhood of $20,000 initial equity investment over the 3-month program, which allows the startup founders to kind of live and relocate to wherever the program is. And they have them around the country now. But many of them are now healthcare oriented, you know, health IT in particular. Yeah. And so they obviously see value in aligning with Mayo. So they're calling this a post-accelerator program that they're doing with Mayo, and they're calling it TechStars Plus Plus,
where so it's kind of an extension.
Yeah, program, they're working so. With corporate partners to help TechStars alumni develop closer ties with big companies. So, you know, read the story. It's, it tells how they're going to work with Mayo. And, you know, so I guess, you know, we finally have Techstars coming to Minnesota in a way, in a roundabout sort of a way. And that's a good thing because it definitely is a major force in the startup community, and back, you know, has the backing of many, many venture capitalists who jump in and fund these companies after they're incubated, in the various cities around the country where they're active. So,
well, imagine being 25 and getting connected with Techstars, for example, and looking at these mentors that they have, you know, the co-founder and co-CEO of Warby Parker, Neil Blumenthal, and Dick Costolo, the CEO of Twitter and founder of Feedburner, and on and on. Wendy Lee, CEO of Get Satisfaction, Fred Wilson, the VC, yada, yada, yada. I mean, imagine having the opportunity to connect with these people and have these people connect you and your startup with somebody. I mean, oh my God.
They really put together a hell of a program. It came out of Boulder with the Foundry Group and a guy named David Cohen, who they originally funded to launch this thing. And the mentor investors really is what makes it happen. There's approximately a dozen, sometimes as much as 20 or more mentor investors in each town where they're active. And it's hands-on, and they put their real money on the line too. But then they get actively involved in advising these startups, and they've launched many, many successful ones already that have gotten big funding, some of which have already been acquired over the years. It's a first-class operation all the way. So yeah, good news there, and healthcare, the healthcare report here for Minnesota, I guess, Minnesota startups. And
nicely done, Dr. Thickens.
Thank you very much. I was pre-med at one time, you know.
I'm sorry.
I am too. Then I hit organic chemistry and I said, you know what? I'm out of here.
Oh, man. Well, when
somebody, I went to journalism.
When somebody told me that to get into the U of M Business School, you had to do accounting 101 and 102, which was described as the organic chemistry of business.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And it was.
Oh,
holy
God.
Buckets.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Anyway, because that's the gatekeeper courses. You know, so it's...
Separates the men from the boys.
It does. It does. Speaking of separation...
How's good that segue.
Okay.
Yes.
So what's up with our pals up in Sartell near St. Cloud, Native X?
They've separated themselves from 12 employees, it looks like.
Really?
So. Yeah.
And do we know why?
What was that? What was the, I think it's just a scaling issue. That's, you know, a fairly small amount of their total workforce. Yeah. But still, it's, you know, it's not a small amount to the 12 people that are impacted. So... did you guys see the,
see the article? I see the story. Yeah. You know, they made a major, pivot. I think it's fair to call it and they're beyond an early stage startup by a long ways, but when they decided to focus on mobile advertising only, that was I'll bet the company kind of move is really what it was.
It was.
So to have a minor glitch, and I hate to say it's minor because it's major for the 12 affected, but, you know, and they're real family up there. They hate to do this, but, you know, the business change for them obviously caused a need to do some adjustments. And, it'll open up new doors for those 12. There'll be lots of places where they can land. And in fact, our recruiter friends are probably licking their chops and rubbing their hands together because they got 12 people to go after. So there you go.
All right. Well, so that's pretty much it for the Minnesota stories that we thought were worthy of our attention this morning.
Well, let's just say we shouldn't say that's pretty much it, because there could be things out there we don't know about. Because granted, we don't know everything.
It's impossible, Phil. possible. That's no, it can't happen.
So guys like us, there's still plenty pajamas. Are you kidding?
There's still plenty. There's plenty out there happening. I'm sure. But
So let's talk about our pals at Microsoft. You know, what was it, last week or the week before, we talked about that $199 HP laptop as a clearly loss leader. But to get people in the space and to compete with Chromebooks.
Well, it's part of their strategy to make Windows free for manufacturers if the screen is 9 inches or smaller. So for netbook style stuff, it's free. For, you know, a 11 or 13 inch machine like this, what is it, the Stream, the right. HP Stream,
right.
Which is sort of like a Chromebook with Windows on it. They probably, you know, have a very, very low price for that, for the Windows. But, you know, as we talked about last time, Windows 8.1 is very, very, it's kind of an interesting hybrid of both a sort of a tablet touch operating system with full on Windows under the hood if you need it. So it's an interesting value proposition, I think.
Yeah. Well, especially now that you can toggle it, so it'll go right to the desktop. Just bypass the tiles,
right?
So that's a bonus.
And you can add back the start menu if you want and all that stuff very easily. And it makes these low cost items very compelling to people that are maybe looking at, you know, getting a Chromebook for cost reasons, not just because that's kind of what they want. Yeah. They want something simple that's secure and whatnot. If you want a full computer, getting one of these HP Streams is a real option, and that's $200 at go to your local Target or Walmart or Best Buy and get them.
Yeah, well, and then discussion in this article is about potentially they're obviously exploring all options, but potentially having a subscription model for Windows.
Yeah, I think that's kind of a weird idea, but they've already done it with Office, so
yeah,
you would think that they would experiment with Windows too.
Well, I don't know. I think it's good that they're exploring all their options.
They can't make it up with the hardware. That's the thing that Apple does. So, you know, the OS will always be free at Apple, but Microsoft, their whole business is the OS.
Right. You know? OS and Windows. OS and Office.
In Office, yeah. So they've got to figure out how to get money from it. And it probably will be coming directly from consumers and not from the OEMs.
Yeah.
You know, over time.
Yep. Well, and then got to go back to you, Phil.
Yes.
Google released Android Studio 1.0.
Right.
Their development environment. And once again, I just have to ask, have you guys taken a look at this? Do you
know much about it? Not at this point. We haven't spent a lot of time with it simply because of the Android projects that are underway already. But yeah, we're always looking at how things are going to change and how things are going to become easier. A lot of the elements of Android Studio here are already being used in various iterations, but now this is the official version of the IDE. So
yeah, okay, got it. Well, what do you think of it? Do you think it's going to enhance
You know me, I'm usually the dumbest guy in the room when I'm sitting at the table with our developers. So I would probably have to defer to our technical folks a little bit more to say, you know, what isn't great about it. But it's something new, and there's constantly things changing in Xcode and Swift and all of those sorts of things. So there's always a constant battle to keep up and make sure that we're operating on the most stable and best platform and environment for clients. I wish I could tell you more about that.
I have to say that it looks pretty clean, and it looks like a nice upgrade over Eclipse, which is what they'd been using, right, which is an open source IDE. Yes,
right.
And it looks like, you know, the Android simulators and all this stuff is very well integrated, and they've got the cloud stuff that's integrated for the back end.
And it's focused on Android while Eclipse does everything. You know, Eclipse is really an IDE for...
Potentially does everything, except for iOS.
Well, yeah, no. I don't mean just mobile, though. I'm talking about enterprise class applications, right. And, you know, it's kind of the enterprise GitHub in many ways. But well, speaking of Phil's intelligence, Graham and Tim, where do you think he rates on the smartness scale with the four of us?
Who knows? I don't know. I'm not gonna take that.
I'm usually the smartest guy.
He's pretty smart. You know those developers? They need a business guy hanging around.
That's right.
Yeah. You got
some guy to pay the bills. You know,
that's what I keep hoping.
Keep the lights on.
I'm counting on that.
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah. Listen to you.
Well,
but I didn't see this LastPass thing. Tell me about this.
Yeah, that's a big deal, right, Steve?
Well, you know, it is and it isn't, because the Dashlane password manager, which they're comparing it to, allows you to change all your, you know, you can set it up to change all your passwords at once. But here's the kicker. LastPass did it so that you can do it one at a time. And you think, well, geez, no, wait a minute. What if I want to change 50 passwords? Well, but here's the kicker. In my experience with LastPass, everybody's login and sign in and change your password screens are different. They're some have pop-ups and others have drop-downs and others are separate pages and, you know, and so on and so forth. So there's no, in my view, I have yet to find a programmatic way to do this easily. I mean, sometimes when I generate a password, when I'm signing up for something, LastPass wants to save the site, but it'll save the sign-up page, not the login page. So I have to go in and manually change that. And that's because there's no standard. And so I actually like the way that LastPass has done this, where you can go in and you can change each one, but do you do it on a case-by-case basis? So I thought it was cool. I love LastPass. I mean, yes, it's more geeky than 1Password, for example. But the one thing that they did that absolutely made me do backflips was with the iOS application, and I don't know about the Android version, but in the past, every time you would move away from LastPass, you'd have to log in again. And I've got a really long login password. Well, now they've got it set up so that it'll run in the background, and if you go to it, you can use your Touch ID to log in, or you can enter your password, and boom, you're there. And it just that one little step makes it so incredibly useful that, you know, if I want to log into Schwab and into my stock account, I can go in and quickly type in SCH and boom, there's Schwab, copy the password, and then go and log into the app.
They haven't done extensions yet on iOS?
Not yet, but that is coming. And so you'll be able to have the little button there where you can have LastPass populate the password field in any application.
Right within the app. Yeah. That's what you do in Android is you open up your app, you know, like your Wells Fargo app, and a little pop-up comes up and it allows you to log into LastPass and then copy it directly into the login screen.
Right. And this is just a stopgap measure until, Apple's apparently going to do something with extensions for other versions of iOS for 7, maybe just 7. They're going to have some kind of an extension, but at any rate, it's just really useful. And, I am down to only 9 sites that are low level. I don't care if somebody got into it, 'cause it's like newspapers and stuff that are using the same password. Otherwise I have, you know, probably 1,100 different accounts in LastPass. Every single one of them has a long password. Oh, hey, Mike, can I rant for just 2 seconds? I'm sorry.
Again?
Yeah. So here's what's just a crazy maker. So I want to use long passwords that have special characters and alphanumeric, upper and lowercase and so on. So that's what I check. And so I log into Wells Fargo's web application. I change my password and I want something with long entropy. So I choose a long character password. I'm not going to say how many. Change my password. Life is good. Get a little email that somebody just changed your password. Hope it was you. If not, just ignore this message. And then I go and try to log into the Wells Fargo app and I can't log in. And I'm copying it from LastPass. I'm doing it again and again and again. I'm so frustrated that I end up going on the website, connecting up with Wells Fargo, who in turn emails me like 5 hours later and connects me up with the mobile project manager, who's CC'd on the email, who in turn tells me that they have a 16 character ceiling on their passwords for mobile. And I remember I emailed back to this guy and just said, you know, I'm really glad that you do that. Wouldn't it be nice if you said something so that, you know, you have on your website that, you know, if you use a password longer than X number of characters, it won't work on the mobile app, or have something in the mobile app. It's like, seriously? And then he tells me where it was. Well, it's, of course, it's buried in settings. You'll never see it. Anyway, so that was my rant. Sorry.
Mm. Wow.
Yeah.
Passwords.
That was, kind of a mini security tip of the week right there.
You know, it kind of was, wasn't it?
Like embedded into this discussion.
Rant.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
There you go.
So did you see the story about Dashlane? When you chose LastPass, did you look at Dashlane? Because once you choose one, you're pretty much going to stick with it, I suppose.
Yeah. But, yeah, I looked at Dashlane and 1Password, and it was LastPass, a security model that I liked, but also there was a resounding endorsement from Steve Gibson that does the Security Now podcast with Leo Laporte. And then I got onto a site that had a discussion. They had like 800 comments, and I read a bunch of them. And I got pretty convinced that LastPass was the way to go. I especially like it that it's encrypted at your local level. So that even if somebody had they couldn't do a man in the middle attack and capture any of your stuff. So.
Yeah, I bring this up only because I saw Jeffrey Fowler at the Wall Street Journal reviewed Dashlane, which is his favorite, and it's a pretty convincing story. But of course, he mentions LastPass and the others. But if somebody wants to get that perspective, I'll put that in the show notes.
Yeah, do that. And then is there any way you can do a link that allows anybody to go look at the article just like one time or?
Yeah. I think the one I just posted is,
okay.
Open.
Okay.
It's funny with the Wall Street Journal. They make some of them open and then they put some of them behind a paywall. And I'm a subscriber, so I'm not really totally sure when I'm posting a link if it's free and open or if it's behind the paywall and you can only see the first paragraph. Yeah. But anyway, it's out there.
I subscribe to Graham, and you can, for any article, you can email it to somebody and that opens it up, even the whole article.
Grab it from there. Yeah.
You grab it from that share. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that works. Well, and sometimes it'll say right at the top, article free pass. And then you know it's a clear URL. You know what I mean? Because it's advertising that they're giving that one out to anybody, you know. But they have to protect most of their stuff, I suppose. Cool. Anyway.
All right. So I know we kind of skipped around here on stories a little bit, but can we just talk for a minute about this, Apple's HomeKit and...
No.
iDevices? Yeah, let's do it anyway.
Home automation, boy.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
yeah, go for it, man.
So somewhat, not hugely, but somewhat the natives are restless with smart things. there's a smart things community forum, and I get a digest once a week, ironically Saturday morning before the podcast. There's some long threads about things that I know are being addressed with a new hub, where you'll be able to have everything there. So if it loses its internet connection, stuff will still work.
Right.
But people are they're sort of up in arms a little bit, like, hey, come on, you guys, it just totally missed these events. It didn't trigger the event, and I've had that happen where, all the lights come on, at a certain time of the day. And I've got them now in three different sequences, and, that's great. Except if for some reason they've got a server hiccup or there's a hiccup with the internet connection for any moment in time, and it doesn't send that event and receive back instructions, the event doesn't trigger, and now the lights aren't on. You know, and it's just little stuff like that. It's like, seriously? Well, what if the water sensor went off in my sump pump and didn't come back, and I never got the text message, you know, because it happened to miss that particular event at that moment in time. And I know these are not trivial problems, but I'm wondering how Apple will ultimately position HomeKit with things that potentially could open them up to significant liability if it fails. You know, I wonder what their disclaimers will be on things that, oh, by the way, the garage door didn't go down, even though HomeKit was supposed to trigger this event that when you drove away with your iPhone, that it was supposed to shut the door and it didn't. And so somebody came in your house and stole all your stuff.
I'm sure the terms of service cover that.
Yeah, probably.
And I'm sure that Apple's going to do a server in your house, whether it's new software or new firmware for, you know, their routers. Maybe it runs in there. Maybe it runs inside Apple TV.
Yeah, it'll have to. Yeah.
Or maybe they have their own little puck-sized server thing for it. All of that's going to be a server that's going to be, you know, communicating with iCloud, but it's not going to be, you know, dependent on iCloud.
Right, right.
You know, I think that's a major issue with smart things is if you're missing this basic stuff like stuff turning on and off, you know, lights turning on and off because your internet goes out, that's a failure in the way that they've architected their solution.
Right. Well, which is why they're coming out with the Hub 2.0.
Well, why didn't it come with the Hub 1.0? It seems like an obvious kind of thing.
Yeah, well, I'm sure if you looked at all the things that they had to do, oh my God. I mean, it's just huge.
There's probably some stories to be told.
I'm sure. But, you know, I was interested in this iDevices platform. I don't know much about this, but they have a software development kit for this. And the iDevices platform it's a complete suite of solutions covering all necessary aspects of HomeKit adoption. So I'm wondering if startups are going to be leveraging this now that it's available.
Well, the power of the Apple marketing machine is big, big, big. So, yeah, you know, you would think they'd be looking that way.
Well, so what I thought was most interesting is they have something called Beacon, a compact location-based broadcaster powered by Bluetooth. And so, you know, it's got geofencing in it and so on. And I think this might have been a real smart move on Apple's part to not reinvent the wheel with an SDK, but rather leverage one that's already got some traction and is moving in the right direction. So I don't know. We shall see.
Time will tell.
Yeah. Yeah. But I'm excited to be able to buy more devices as well. You should see my Christmas list.
I don't even want to see your Christmas
GE Lash lamp modules. It's like, what?
Wow.
You want more lamp modules? Nice. Yeah, yeah.
How many will be under the tree? You need more devices.
And remember the tree will be driven by
yeah. It already is.
Oh, of course it is.
I had an extra lamp module, so
there you go.
Well, why not?
I don't know. Why not?
Yeah, because we have, we used to light candles, but then there was a fire risk. So I just figured, hey, why not, put LEDs on there? And I was teasing about the candles. So
that's good. Yeah. What do you guys think about this?
The Victorian home of Steve. Yeah,
that's right. That's right. Where I wear my corset at night. Yes. Parade around in front of the mirror. Anyway.
So what do you think about this Apple Watch production announcement? It sounds like it's cranking up over there in Taiwan to be building these things even yet this month.
Pretty exciting.
How many of you guys going to get one of these things?
Oh, I am. But
who's hitting their microphone like mad?
That'd probably be Graham. He always does that.
it's a creaky old microphone. I got to get a better one.
You know, I forget what the low end one costs.
$349, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll probably get one just, but I'm going to get the, I'm not going to go spend, $5,000 for a gold one.
Well, no,
the gold one will be more like $10,000, I think.
Yeah, probably.
But there's going to be plenty of prices in between, $1,000, $2,000,
Right.
Yeah. I'm not going to go nuts either, but I got to have one.
The Apple Watch color.
I'm skeptical of the Apple Watch, only because it seems like they're trying to do too much. They're trying to do a smartphone on your wrist, and I don't want a smartphone on my wrist, So
what do you want on wrist?
I think that what Android Wear is doing, which is very simple notifications and other simple apps, is an Apple-esque way. I mean, it's a very simple solution. And I think that has more potential than a thing that has three different ways to interact with it,
But here's what you need to do. I mean, this is in my view.
It seems complicated, not Apple to me.
Well, it does, but again, look at this sort of in a 360 degree perspective. So you've got HealthKit and HomeKit, and you've got the tablet, phone, and watch. And what is the thing? So rather than have a key fob like SmartThings and others have to detect your presence and where you are in any given space, in a geofence space, or even if you're not, if you're just outside the proximity of your Wi-Fi, if you've got the watch on, then your presence is available to you anywhere, and you can control your devices with it. You can control your TV, yada, yada, yada. And then it's also a Fitbit or a Jawbone Up or whatever as well. And we're only looking at it from the perspective of what's already in the market, what's available now. But instead, think forward in terms of all the possibilities with stuff that it could potentially interact with. I think that's the big thing.
And I think it's fair to say you'll be able to customize your experience, right? I mean, if you don't want the whole enchilada on your wrist, you don't have to have it, right? I mean, you can set it up to your own liking with just the notifications you want, obviously.
Yeah, no, I think most of the ones that they sell will be that sport model, the one that's aluminum, for mainly for people when they're running or working out. They can listen to, it's like an iPod and it's a health tracker at the same time. I think that kind of makes sense. But, if you want to track your health, you can do it now for $100.
Right.
Just get a Jawbone or get a Fitbit. And $350 is a chunk of change.
But do those cheap ones, they really don't do heart rate well, do they? Or, and blood pressure is coming and, glucose monitoring is coming. I don't know where all that is at with respect to the Apple Watch, but that'll depend on apps, right?
Well, you have to have the sensors in there.
And but anyway, it's going to open up a whole new.
And the processing will have to be done on a much more robust device like the phone or the tablet or maybe your Mac. But do you remember when Palm came out with that that little almost like a tiny little laptop that connected only with the phone?
Yeah,
and people just
we talked about it.
Yeah,
what would they call that? I forget. Folio. That's what they
Folio.
Called it.
Yes, thank you. Mm. And I have one, by the way. Which
why are we not surprised?
I don't know what I'm ever going to do with it. I'm sure I won't be able to sell it for much, but. No, but it just absolutely tanked because A, it was a piece of crap and it was slow, but also you had to have your phone. People were like, what? Why would I want to do that? Why would I want to be tethered to my phone? And so
because the intelligence is in the phone.
Well, precisely.
I still think that's a good idea.
Yeah, but
the execution was not good.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I think that the thing that I'm looking at too is, now that you can set up your Mac, for example, to connect up to your phone, your Mac and your iPad to connect up with your phone so that if you get a phone call and your phone's downstairs and you're upstairs with your iPad, you can actually answer the phone call on your iPad.
Yeah. What do they call that? Continuity? Is that the term?
Yeah.
Or something like that?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. So anyway, all right. Hey, we should jump into the cool thing of the week. We're running out of time here, guys.
Yeah,
so,
we are.
Okay.
I think we should start with our pal, Tim.
Okay. Well, I'm thinking of kind of the holidays now, and people may be looking for gifts for people like us who are more technically minded. And a book I just started this week is called The Innovators by Walter Isaacson, who you may remember wrote the Steve Jobs biography. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And this is a book he actually was working on before, and he put it on the shelf. And then after he finished the Jobs book, he went back. And I've just started it, and it's really fascinating because instead of doing this like most of the history of the computing and all of that may start back in the World War II era, he starts back in the 1840s with the Countess of Lovelace and moves on from there with each innovation that builds on itself and culminates in, you know, personal computing and the web and everything that we have now. So it seems to move very quickly. I've just started it this week, and it's very good. So I'm recommending it, even though I haven't finished it yet. I'll probably have it done by next week, and I'll have some more thoughts on it. But it's a good book. So if you have someone on your gift list who's technically minded like us, might be a good option for you.
That would be a great gift.
Yeah,
yes, it would.
That's right, dear. That's right, dear. It would be a great gift.
Don't get it from me though, because I already have it.
Go to Tim's house and borrow it from him.
If you're like Phil and I, who live in Dakota County, you can get it from the Dakota County Library with the 3M Pocket. What do they call it? Cloud Library application.
Very nice.
Yeah, but do it right away now, because if a lot of people do it, they only It'll have a number of copies, right?
This is funny. I'm sure Julio will find this hilarious. I was looking for the book in my cloud library, and I actually checked out the Spanish version of it. I put it up, and I'm like all excited. Oh, I get it. And I open it up, it's all in Spanish. I'm like, oh, no.
See, so you had to.
Have the English version, right? So I checked it back in and searched again, and I found the English version. And check that out. So.
Very nice.
You know, this is the universe's way of saying, Tim, you need to learn a new language.
I need to learn Spanish.
Yes,
apparently.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Julio's available to help.
I'm working on it. I'll have to start working on it.
Phil, what's your thing?
Well, you know, I had one thing that I had put in, but while we were sitting here, I got an update on one of my many feeds, and I got to have this. This is called Pyro. This shoots fireballs from your wrist.
Nice.
Really?
Nice.
Oh, yes. I mean, like, honest to goodness fireballs.
Honest to goodness fireballs. It's actually small wads of flash paper.
This will be great at
this.
Cocoa.
This is cool. Is this so cool? I got to get
40-foot ceilings.
Oh, how funny.
So,
do they have one? Do they have one that will shoot spider webs? Oh, never mind.
No, not yet.
No, this is cool.
This is controlled with a remote switch from up to 30 feet away and tucks under your sleeve to remain hidden. Worn on the wrist like watch, the gadget can shoot 4 fireballs, one from each of its 4 barrels, a distance of 10 feet before it needed to be reloaded.
Oh, how funny.
It's only $174 for you to go out and be Iron Man. So there you go.
Jeez.
Fire Marshal will love this. And
they will. But won't you be the hit of the bonfire when you can light it from 10 feet away?
Oh, man.
I love that.
Graham, how about yours, buddy?
Well, you know, I'm in the spirit of Christmas and books too, and seeing Tim's entry, that Innovators book, which, by the way, I read a review. It sounds absolutely awesome. But I found a book that I've already, and this has nothing to do with tech, at least not directly, but the Beatles lyrics, the stories behind the music, including the handwritten drafts of more than 100 classic Beatles songs.
Oh, cool.
This is by the crazy researcher over in the UK that actually hung around with these guys back in the day. His last name is Davies. He's written a number of books on the Beatles. This is his latest, and it's a huge hit. It was actually sold out on Amazon. And I thought, what? How can something be sold out on Amazon? but because I tried to buy it for a gift a few days ago. Luckily, I went back on a day or two after, and it was back on there. But I'm sure this thing is going to be on the top, top five nonfiction bestseller list. It's a hardcover, about $22 on Amazon. I'm a huge Beatles fan. Well,
and I'm just looking at the Amazon look inside feature. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of great photos in here. Here's one. Oh. The Quarrymen in November of 1957. Paul and John are at their microphones in white jackets, indicating they are the joint leaders.
With Pete Best on drums.
Oh, how
there
funny.
You go. Yeah.
How funny. Well, I'm going to check this out.
This guy has got an amazing archive of stuff on the Beatles, and it's taken him years to put this one together, I'm sure. So that's my tip of the week.
Nice. Oh, how funny. Well, so my cool thing is nowhere near as neat as any of yours, but I just thought it was cool. On. So I started
Boy,
to look
no
at,
shit, is this dull.
Oh, come on. No, but here's the difference. I mean, you guys know how much faster.
Fireballs, dude. Fireballs.
Fireballs, I know. But you know how cool it is to boot up your laptop with an SSD drive, right? How much faster it is.
Oh, it's great.
Yeah, solid state drive. Well, one of the trends that's going on is more and more hosting companies are changing out their storage area networks and with hard drives and replacing them with SSDs. Now, they're more expensive, so you get less storage and their offerings are less, but oh my God, are they fast. And so Media Temple, I had to make a change off the dedicated server because we were investing way too much in terms of resource to get help with, from Linux, a Linux jockey to handle the OS and do all the stuff that was necessary. And so shifted to a managed, not a fully, but a managed VPS, virtual private server, running on SSD. And it's like jaw-droppingly fast. So
are you with Media Temple? I thought you had switched off.
No, I off their grid system. I mean, if you've got low level needs and you want to spend, $20 a month, they've also shifted their grid to SSD. So even the cheap hosting version is fast.
But you had moved to Bluehost.
I bought a dedicated server there.
Yes.
On a monthly basis, but now I'm shifting off of that because it's self-managed, which means we have to handle all the updates and upgrades and SQL fixes and all kinds of. It's just an absolute nightmare of time.
So Media Temple is going to take care of that for you.
Well, they do all of that stuff. Yeah. So the OS is patched and set up, and they do audits on it and so on. I'm paying almost exactly the same. I'm paying a dollar more. And I have less storage, but it's perfect for our needs. And they have dedicated WordPress hosting running on SSDs, and it's pretty cool. So anyway, that's my cool thing.
Nice. Big fun.
Yeah, not that anything you'd want to give to your under the tree to
somebody.
Well,
it depends on who it is. I mean, if you got that as a gift, be giddy.
Well, one year I gave gave each one of the kids their own domain name, their name.com. Had set them up with emails and did all this stuff, and it went over like a lead balloon. So it's the last time I did that.
Thanks, Dad.
Yeah. Gee, thanks, Dad. What am I going to do with this?
Guess I'm not getting married.
Yeah. That's right. Oh my God. Okay. What events are coming up, boys?
Well, the big one that I realized you didn't have on your list yet, well, and the Eventbrite site just went live this week. So, but date night on February 3rd at Carlson School, co-sponsored by Mini Analytics and Carlson School, is going to be a fascinating look at how data science leads to I Do. And it's a really cool panel of a couple of university professors that research this stuff. And the CEO of OkCupid and the UCLA mathematician who hacked it and found his fiance that way.
Oh, how funny.
It'll be a really cool event that'll sell out, I'll guarantee you. It's a 3-hour-ish kind of event, I think, with, you know, reception and so forth. And there might be some stuff added in advance of it in some breakout rooms. They're trying to get more breakout rooms because they're expecting at least 300 people, and it might have to be more than that. So, yeah, the link is, the Eventbrite link is now open, and I've put in a link to the Mini Analytics blog, which explains the whole thing.
Great. Well, and what's funny is that, you know, with big data, I just remember being a kid and, or, you know, my teens and hearing my psych professor, or teacher in high school talk about the statistics on divorce and how you were more likely to remain married if you came from the same backgrounds and, you know, came from the same religion and, you know, et cetera, but that you came from the same socioeconomic class as well. And I'd be really curious about the data and how they're mining the data to figure all this stuff out.
Yeah. Well, it'll be the experts that know more about this than anybody else. I'm telling you, there's a couple of professors, I think one's from Canada and forget where the other one's coming from. And Ravi Bapna, who heads the analytics and social media analytics program at Carlson, will be on the panel as well. So that'll be a good one.
That's a good one. Yeah.
And then Mobile March is coming up. Tickets are available. So at the early bird price of $85. So go to MobileMarchTC.com.
That's a bargain. Bargain, my man.
Yes. So good stuff planned for that. Really good stuff. I'm sorry we don't have more details or lock things up, but that's why we make the price so cheap. So we'd love to have you join us. So,
Sounds great.
And you can also get that on Eventbrite. My God, guys, we talked a lot this morning.
We did.
Well, wait a minute. I guess I didn't. I wonder who did. Anyway. All right, guys. So there's going to be lots happening next week. We know this for a fact, and we will talk about it on
the Minute 8 Gang podcast.
Yeah. Right. Happy holidays.
Take care.
Good week.
Bye-bye.
Till this day, some of these boys got a frown on their face. Complaining's another disgrace. It bore me, boy, that you so moody. That's why I wrote the complaint of Boogie Woogie. Said your money's almost gone. You cry complaining, then you moan. You miss a boat cause you too old. Either tide is too cold. Never blame yourself, it's always me. Like a blind man, you just can't see. The side of you, we lead a room. All you talk about is gloom. You cheated, now ain't that bad. Nobody cares, now ain't that sad. Don't dig jokes, they ain't no good. Loosen up, baby, just like you should. That's why I wrote the complainers, Boogie Woogie.